Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is the third and final chapter of the book of Habakkuk in the OU's Nachyomi project. And as we've been seeing, Habakkuk is a Navi who takes on not specific, first of all, doesn't take on the Jewish people really at all. He doesn't take on specific crimes or issues, but he's taking on a much broader topic. It's sort of an extended conversation about the question of, and it's not extended, nearly as extended as the book of Iyov is, so you get the conclusions much faster, but also they're much more narrowly stated, or they're much more hiddenly stated. So the Perek Gimel, which is the read as the second one, other than also the first pasuk, the last pasuk of Perek Bet, Perek Gimel is read as the Haftarah for the second day of Shavuot, is a Perek that covers much ground, meaning in the first Perek we saw Habakkuk's complaint, in the second Perek we saw largely Hashem's answer being largely that it'll all work out in the end. So now Habakkuk comes, and in Rashi's reading of it, he is now apologizing for his temerity in having raised the question. The Perek starts, Shilal Habakkuk HaNavi, Al Shigyonot, a prayer. So the question, what do you mean by a prayer? He's not asking for anything here, so much as here the word tefillah seems to be being used in the context of addressing Hashem directly. Al Shigyonot, so the English here has, in the mode of Shigyonot, Rashi has, Al Shigyonot, that Rashi thinks is B'kesh Rachamim Alach Moshe Tiach Dvarim Kinter Achar Midat Adin. It's called Shigyonot because he's apologizing for himself for his Shigyonot, for his having been so off, crazy, out of line in terms of questioning Hashem's attributes of justice and or mercy and how they work. The Radak here on this word, on Shigyonot, and on this whole Perek, comments that it's called a tefillah, and he notes that it's a tefillah in the sense that it's very similar to the book of Tehillim. And he gives three aspects, just linguistic aspects of our Perek, that are similar to the book of Tehillim, of David's Psalms. Aspect number one is the reference to Shigyonot, that's not a common word, it does appear in Tehillim. Another one is the word Selah that we will come across. So Selah is a word that is not clearly understood. So the JBS English thinks that it's a musical direction. We usually use the word Selah in some sense of forever. It should happen all the time, but it doesn't always fit in. In any case, I want to also point out, just to pay attention to something that the Radak says, that this is like Tehillim in that sense, because this is the only place, other than Tehillim, that the word Selah is used. So I used my computer to verify that, and as far as I've been able to tell, that is correct, but I do think we should note, and when we think about what knowledge really is and what we mean by knowledge of something, note that the Radak knew that and was able to assert that with confidence without having a concordance, without having anything like that, because in times gone by, when people learn something, they knew it well. And we need to watch that and pay attention to it and perhaps feel sad at our level of knowledge. In any case, you also notice the last words in the book of Habakkuk, or Lam Natsiach Ben Ginotai, which the JPS English translates as the very end in Pasuk Yutet, which JPS English has for the leader with instrumental music, but they agree that they don't really know what it means. So Lamenatzeach Beneginotai, Rashi has Leben Levi Haminatzeach Bashir Anim Lo Beneginotai, right? I'm going to give him my tunes, my words, and then he'll find a way to put it to music, suggesting that one of the functions of the Levim was to take the words of David, or the beautiful words of Tanakh, and put them into music that would be inspiring to all those who came to the Beit HaMikdash. So, whereas today, often you have songwriters who think they have to write their own music, and then the question is the person who's skilled at music necessarily the person who has the insight into the human condition, or into Hashem, or into whatever it is we want insight into, to write the words as well? Sometimes maybe that's not true. Maybe that you need to have somebody who's the word writer, and then somebody else who will do the musical aspect of it. So it seems like here, Lam Zeb Nigotai, according to Rashi, means something along that line in terms of the split of responsibilities. In any case, to get back to the beginning of the Perek, the Radak says, he just says, this is written in the manner of Tehillim. Of course, despite its being written in the manner of Tehillim, it appears in the Navi section of Tanakh, whereas Tehillim appears in the Ketuvim section of Tanakh, which does imply that Chazal understood the book of Habakkuk to have a different level of inspiration, a different level of attachment, a connection to Ruach HaKodesh, to the Divine Spirit, than does the book of Tehillim. They all have the Divine Spirit in them, but Navi is at a higher level. So then what we have here is Habakkuk offering something akin to the kinds of prayers that David HaMelech did, and yet with that higher level of inspiration. And these prayers, so, but why would it be in the mode of Tehillim? So I think it might be in the mode of Tehillim because Tehillim gives us an example of how one approaches Hashem recognizing one's humanity and one's insignificance, as it were, and yet making real claims on or comments to or discussions, having real discussions with Hashem. So that's something that you have often in the Book of Tehillim. He raises topics for consideration, for thinking about, all in a very religious context. It's not a question of protest, and that might be what Rashi means by Habakkuk is sort of apologizing, because the mode that's being adopted now is the mode of what David HaMelech did, which was to be fully aware of his lacks and his insignificance isn't the right word, of his lacks and his lack of standing before Hashem to make comments, and yet to raise those issues and make those comments anyway. So maybe that's some of what's going on here for Habakkuk. Pasuk bet, Hashem shamati shimacha yareti, Hashem pa'alcha bekerv shanim chayehu bekerv shanim todia, berogez rachem tiskor. So Hashem, the little is, I've heard all the things you've done. So Rashi says, Asher me'olam shenifrata tamid mimach isecha v'et harasha hazeh ata sovel. I've heard, so Rashi thinks there's still some reference to Nineveh or Nebuchadnezzar. I've heard your greatness, that part of what you always do is, you eventually, right, we saw in Perek Bet, so in other words, Habakkuk is admitting, I've heard what you're saying, I know that your reputation is that you eventually take care of evildoers. So I said, yareti. And then I said, so how is it different? Why is it that the Midat HaDin Bavon Yisrael is going to be so much different? So I'm going to go back now, and I'm going to remember that you used to do this to our forefathers as well, that when there were times of trouble, you would be giving their punishment, and yet even within that time of trouble and of punishment, Berogez Rachem Tizkor, a pasuk that we say in our davening, Berogez Rachem Tizkor, even when Hashem is most angry with us, with the Jewish people, nonetheless, there will be compassion and empathy in that administration of punishments. The Radak, similarly, although he thinks that this is not so much about just complaining what's going on, but Shamati Kol Neva Omer Elai HaGalut HaAroch Sheyeh. He sees a prediction of a recognition of the fact that we are destined for, or that we were destined at that time, and now we've already gone through much of it, hopefully the vast majority of it, for a long and continuous exile. And I was afraid, how could it be that we're going to be able to stand among our enemies for all this time, and that's why I'm praying to you. So for the Radak, the prayer is more about even granting that there's justice here. How are we as a nation going to survive it? And that's why the prayer ends with Berogez Rachem Tizkor, that you should let it all be known that you remember and have your compassion for us even at the time you're punishing us. I would just point out that the Ramban quotes this pasuk when he's talking in Shemot about Hashem seeing the Jewish people in their slavery. Berogez Rachem Tizkor, the Ramban says, Al derech ha'emet yesh k'tav hazeh sod gadol m'sidrei Torah. There is an important esoteric secret here in this pasuk, which is that our troubles and our punishments come up to Hashem, and in some way, so the reason we call it a secret is because he doesn't want to anthropomorphize God. There is no before God in that sense of literally that our prayers rise to heaven, and it's not true. It's not true in that literal sense, and yet there is a meaning in which it is true, that our cries come to Hashem in some way more than the rest of the events in the world, and Hashem, as it were, pays attention more to them, and that's part of our pasuk as well. Berogez Rachem Tizkor, that in your anger, you're still going to remember us. So now, we're going to have a review of all the things that have gone on, meaning Hashem Shimacha, Shamati Shimacha, I heard of your tales, so now Habakkuk is going to review some of those historical events to give us a picture of Hashem's workings in the world so they can be part of it. So in other words then, and this I think is valuable for the second day of Shavuot, when you have that Haftarah, let me also mention, just because I occasionally allow myself a moment of self-advertising, I do have in manuscript, I have it in a computer file that I'm happy to send to anybody who wants it, a book on the Haftarah. It takes every Haftarah of the year, and it summarizes or discusses major issues within Haftarah in 1,000 words. So it's not the half an hour that we give to Plikim here. 1,000 words is even less than that. It's a sketchy summary, perhaps, but it tries to attack and discover the main ideas as well as summarizing the content. So that is available from me if you'd like. Just email me, grothst@gmail.com. Tell me you'd like me to attach it as a file. I'd be happy to send it to you. 1,000 words in every Haftarah. The book, I think, has a name, Educating a People. Right, because it is my understanding that the Haftarot were meant for us to learn something from them, and therefore it's a tragedy that too many of us hear the Haftarot being read and even perhaps pay attention but don't really get it because we don't understand what's going on with it because the Haftarot are difficult, like this one is difficult. So, Pasuk goes on, Pasuk Gimel Eloka Miteman Yavo, God comes from Teman, Mekadosh Behar Paran Sela, and it comes from Har Paran, so here you see that Sela cannot mean forever, because it comes from far on, from way back when. This is talking about, this is understood to be the time of Matan Torah, and there are, this is one of the sources for the Gemara's assumption that is well known, that before God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, He offered it to the other nations of the world, and they rejected it. And then at that moment of Matan Torah, the earth was, the heavens were covered with His glory, and His praise filled the earth, right? At the time of Matan Torah. Part of the reason for that is because the giving of, so the Radak takes it fairly literally, the lightning bolts that were lighting up the entire world, so that's what created it. And Pasuk and Rashi says, Kisaha Shamayim Hodo B'Sinai LeYisrael. Right, when he's giving the Torah to Israel, so we're going to see in the coming Pesukim that it might also mean that just the events of Sinai created glory for Hashem. We'll come back to that thought in a second. Noga ka'or tiyeh karnayim yado lo v'sham chavyon uzo. And there was light as if it was right the middle of the day. It was early in the morning, but it was all over the place. Light ka'or tiyeh ka'or miyuchad. Rashi thinks that it's ka'or miyuchad shal shivat yimei habreshit. There is that strand in Midrash that says that the first 7 days of creation, whatever we mean by the 7 days of breshit, had a different quality of light, a greater quality of light than the rest of human time. That's the famous Midrash. It's connected to the famous Midrash of the moon coming to complain to Hashem that he, the moon and the sun, should not be able to have equal levels of light. So that whole question of light, Hashem puts it away for future time. Rashi is suggesting that our Pesukim are suggesting that that light was there at Har Sinai. And there, v'sham chavyon azo, sham nigle'u zo sheyachavui l'mafreya b'seit v'yon. And all of Hashem's strength was revealed there at Har Sinai. So why is he reviewing Har Sinai? I think he's reviewing Har Sinai because it's part of understanding in the course of Jewish history and the course of human history that there was this moment when ideally the whole world, and certainly the Jewish people, were supposed to embed it in themselves forever, that it is our responsibility to follow Hashem's desire and wills, etc. And that's always at the bedrock of any future calculations, meaning if Hashem punishes us for doing X thing wrong, and we say, well, it's not so bad, we say, why are you doing this way, that, or are you punishing us in this way, especially as a national thing, why are we in Galut for so long? The first step always is to go back to Har Sinai and to recognize that we had a lasting responsibility, we had a lasting servitude to Hashem that never goes away, and that therefore the punishments all stem from that. The Radak, by the way, agrees. Kilo, the Radak says, that also the light of the olden times was revealed, that it was in the time of Har Sinai you had an event of a light and a kind of a light of the world that Israel. So he thinks the light is the way in which Hashem became revealed to the entire Jewish people, and that that revelation was something that you never had before and since then. And that too, I think, is supposed to be a bedrock of our Jewish experience. I've said this many times. My father, Allah Hashem, said it to me, and I've said it to many teenagers. They don't accept it as much as I've accepted it from my father, but I think it's a strong, strong point that needs to be repeated often, which is that the source of our faith, or one of the central sources of our faith, is our belief that not only we as individuals have perhaps some experience of God, some relationship with God, or any of that, but more significantly, that we as a people have the tradition that each and every one of us, through the vehicle of our forefathers, each and every one of us witnessed the events at Sinai and had a relationship with Hashem that came from there, and that's what's going on. In terms of the Karnaim Yedo Lo, so somebody assumes, Rashi assumes, the Karnaim Yedo Lo are the horns of light, the rays of light, the beams of light that came out of, I'm sorry, the Radak says it, Zehu ki karan or pnei Moshe, that he amar kanayim ki apanim shnei tzadim, right? There were two sides to his face, and they were both beaming with light after Moshe Rabbeinu experienced with Hashem. So what are those beams of light? So they are perhaps literally light, but what's the point of Moshe having walked away from the encounter with Hashem with having beams of light? So the Sifrei Zuta says, like the rays you get from the sun, so Moshe Rabbeinu becomes like a sun. I think the whole point, or part of the point, would be to emphasize and make clear that the source of light is Hashem, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu's encounter with Hashem creates light in the very same sense as, in the very same way that that the light is, that the sun itself produces light. And that is what is being That is what being said here.
Pasuk Hey Lefanav Yileich Davar V'Yitzei Reshef
LeRaglav. So this is still at our description of what's happening at Har Sinai. Lefanav Yileich Davar. So the Radak quotes his father. He says we're talking about the Meitei Midbar. And that Hashem used this Dever to punish the Jewish people. So in the Radak reading, it's not what I just said. The Rashi reads it the way I just said it. Radak reading, now we're moving on already to now the punishment. You had the events at Har Sinai, and yet, right after that, you had the events of the Egel, and then of the Meraglim, of the spies, which led to the Jews being required to wander through the desert for 40 years, and then Hashem would slowly kill them off. So then we're moving on to another topic. Rashi thinks that it's the description of Har Sinai still. He thinks that Afanam Yelech Daver Vayetzer Resh of the Raglav is that Hashem found ways to have the forces of destruction and evil not bother and not get in the way of Matan Torah. So Afanam Yelech Daver, he quotes a Medrash Agadah that says that when Hashem gave the Torah to Yisrael, he found a way to get the Malach HaMavet to go do other things, to be involved in something else, so that he wouldn't stand there saying the Jews don't deserve it. And then Vayetzer Resh of the Raglav, Malachi Reshev Ba'u Imo Lahar Sinai, that he brought with him to Har Sinai, so Malachi Reshev would be angels that produce plagues. So it would be Malach HaMavet would produce plagues, suggesting that the events of Har Sinai, for all of their wonder, for all of their splendor, for all of their glory, were at the same time events that carried with them the reminder and the threat and the possibility of significant punishment.
So now Pasuk Vav Amar Vayimodet Eretz Ravay Ater Goyim Vayitpotetzu Arereiad Shachu Givot Olam Alichot Olam Lo. So this is a pasuk which has a couple of important mamarich all attached to it. Amar Vayimodet Eretz means literally. When we read the JPS literally translation, Amar Vayimodet Eretz, when he stands, he makes the earth shake. Vayimodet might literally mean more, he measures the earth. Ra'am Vayater Goyim, and when he sees the earth, so Vayater Goyim, the JPS thinks that he makes the nations tremble. The Radak thinks, Amar Vayimodet Eretz, him tim the dakdek.
To stay with the literal translation for a second, or the real literal, the attempts at literal, Rashi thinks that it's a reference to the time of Dor HaMabul, of the flood, and Noah's time. So then we're going back now, right? It's part of Eloka, it's part of perhaps Har Sinai, but it's saying that as part of Har Sinai, the background for it was that he had, in the time of the Mabul, realized that they weren't doing it. He had punished them, Rashi says, Midah Keneged Midah, appropriately. So that's the tradition that the flood waters are not only flooded waters, but they're also boiling waters because they also had used boiling things inappropriately. And then when it came to Ra'am Vayater Goyim, he sees the nation of the Dor HaFlaga, of the Tower of Bavel, and they saw that they were all one nation, Vayater Goyim, so he split them up because they were doing the wrong thing there. That's Rashi's reading of it. Radak's reading of it is Amad, Aaron ba Gilgalar ba Asrei Shana ad shikafshu haaretz v'chalkua b'midah uvechevel. And then Moshe saw that they should get out all the nations from the land. Vayipotetzu havirayad, and then they exploded the mountains of forever. The Malchi Kinaan. So Radak says Vayipotetzu has been exploded. You didn't know what exploding so much was, but it was Yana Shfiraim hapizur. You break it with splitting it all up. Halichot olamlo lefichach yasebahem kirtanu lagbia zeh ulahashpil. Because the world is going to be functioned by halichot olam, by the movements of the stars. So the commonality between Rashi, Radak, and the JPS English is that this pasuk is being taken to mean whichever application you give to it, but that Hashem is powerful enough, has the power to shift the world around in the way that He wants to, and give dominion to those to whom Hashem wants to give dominion, and to take it away, and to take it away from others. So for Rashi, it was the time of the Mabul. It was prior to Matan Torah, prior to Har Sinai. For Radak, it's when the Jews are entering the land of Israel. And for the JPS, it's just in general. I mention all that because these psukim are well. This pasuk is well known both for the beginning and the end. The beginning, Amar Vayavutot Eretz Rav Vayater Goyim, is taken by the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and other places to be a source for the idea that non-Jews nowadays, even if they keep the seven mitzvot of Bnei Noach, do not get reward for it. So the question is, what do you mean they don't get reward for it? There's a whole long discussion of that and of what it means, but I think it's plausible to argue that it means they only get rewarded for it if they do it as a reflection of Hashem and of their recognition that Hashem rules the world, whereas there may have been a time, this is a whole discussion that you'd have to have by going through the Sukkot, there may have been a time when they get the reward for it even without consciously recognizing, even without making a point of ascribing their service of God, ascribing their observance of these mitzvot to Hashem. So Amar v'yavod eretz v'avayat tergoyim is taken by the Gemara to mean that they lost the ability to gain a certain kind of reward, and that therefore their place in the world of service of God was greatly hurt, and that laid the foundations for Matan Torah. But then it also explains why the Gemara says in several places on Halichot Olam Lo that somebody who learns halacha every day is guaranteed a share in the world to come. So if you take that just at its plainest sense, it sounds ridiculous because you'd have to actually observe the halachot. So I think the point the Gemara is making is, yes, of course you have to observe the halachot, but it's saying that the involvement in halacha and the awareness of halacha as the metric by which Hashem is revealed in the world, so that is an important category, an important stage, and that is what is being spoken about here, halichot olam lo, and then that would explain how it connects in the Gemara's reading of it, how it connects back to the question of avayater goyim, of the nations being losing that because they weren't observing even their seven mitzvos, even the seven commandments that they had been given, that they had the right to, that they had been told to observe, and their lack of observance of that would then have been, is then the source for them being left out of the world of halacha in a significant way. They can get it back, at least according to the Rambam and others, but they have to work much harder than the original plan might have been for them to have to work. Pasuk Zayin Tachat Aven Ra'iti Alei Chushan Yirgizun Yiriot Alei Midyat. So Rashi reads it as, instead of, or Tachat Av, because of the evils that the Jews are doing, I see that Alei Chushan, I see that the people of Chushan are going to be able to come and to stand openly and attack the Jews and rule over the Jews. Right, Yergizu, you wrote Eretz Midyan, and the same thing will be true of Midyan. In other words, Rashi sees this now as Chabakuk is bringing it all together. He's coming to understand. We had this, we had the background being the flood and the Dor HaFlagah that split up with the generation because of the Tower of Babel, of Bavel. That led in some way, and again, we're talking historic time, so it doesn't lead directly, but it leads over the course of historic time to the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai. That becomes the foundation of our existence. So if we don't keep it, then we'll get punished, and that's why the generation of the desert had to die out in the desert, and that's what will be able to produce possibility of situations where other nations will have rule over us. By the way, just in Pasuk Zayin, Radak thinks, though, that this is talking about the Jews, Ayat Niel, and Mohammed Gidon, and Midian, and all those places, when they didn't have a way to stand up to anybody, they could. So Radak is reading this more consistently as being a praise of Hashem, a recognition of Hashem, helping us and serving us. Whereas Rashi is more as a reflection of Jewish history in its fullest senses. Pasuk Chet, Havin Naharim, Chare Hashem, Im Ba Naharim Apecha, Im Ba Yam Evratecha, Are you angry, Hashem, at the Naharim, at the rivers? Is your anger against them, against the seas, when you ride on your horses and you bring your chariots of Yeshua? That would be sort of the literal reading of it. So the Radak thinks it's mentioned, it's a reference to the splitting of the Jordan when Yehoshua was going through, and the splitting of Yam Suf. And it's saying that that Hashem is the source of Yeshua, the source of salvation. The Radak thinks all of the reference to horses is just a metaphor for the fact that Hashem brings horses. Are usually in human terms the way that you bring about salvation, and that's what Hashem does for us. Yate or kashtecha shivuot matot omer sela naharot tivaka aret. Right, you open up your bone. She says that you bring out your heroism, your glory in the open. And the Shavuot Matot Omer Sela, that the promises you made to the Shvatim, to the tribes, to give them the land of Israel and to give them good, that's what's all coming out here. And that's why Hashem gave us all of these great things. And so, which are the great things that you think we're talking about here? Pasuk Yud Reucha Yachilu Harim Zerem Mayim Avar Natan Tehom Kolo Rom Yadehu Nasa. So when they see you, the mountains are afraid, and
and Zerem Mayim Avar, and a stream of water comes down or by, and then the Tahom, the deep, gives its voice, and Rom Yadehu Nasa, and the high places give praise to you. So Radak reads this allegorically, metaphorically, as Reucha Yachilu Harim is not the mountains, it's the people of Kinaan who see all of these great things, and they are afraid of you. And then the deeps give up their water. Rom Yadehu Nasa, I just point out the Radak things, that Rom Yadehu Nasa, which means that the English here has the sky returns its echo, but the Radak things, that's a reference to when the Jordan was finished splitting, right? So, and Rashi reads it sort of that way. Tzva Hashemayim Hodulo, that the hosts of heaven agree or announce Hashem or admit Hashem's greatness. Rashi does agree with Radak, though, that it's Natam Tahom Kolo Shibchu Yoshivei Haaretz. It's the people. It's not really a reference to the mountains. It's the people. But then, so it's interesting because the next words are Rashi taking it literally, that it's Tzva Hashemayim. So it doesn't mean that it's the sun and the moon and the stars. It's the hosts of heaven, which may be in Rashi's reading the sun and the moon and the stars. There is a strand of Midrash that thinks of those heavenly bodies as having some kind of consciousness. That's a topic for another time. But to come back to Rom Yadehu Sad, the Radak thinks that it's the waters of the Jordan when they split. So the Jordan was full, he thought, and therefore it made a relatively tall amount of water. And then when it came down with power, and that's Rom Yadehu Nasa. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Shemesh, Yareach, Hamad, Zivula, La'or Chitzecha, Yehalechu, Lenoga, Berak Chanitecha. So, Shemesh, Yareach, Radak thinks, is a reference to the war at Gibeon when Yehoshua is called by the people who had tricked him into making a compact with them, making a treaty with them, and then he goes to fight for them, and then he's beating various nations, but the moon is about to come out and the sun is about to go down, and he says famously, Shemesh b'givon don, v'yareach b'emek ayalon, that the sun should stay where it is and the moon should stay where it is. So this is a reference to that. Shemesh yareach amad zvula, they stood when they were told to. Or chitzach yalecho, at the time when your arrows are flying, lenoga b'rach chanitecha, to the shining of your spears, meaning to the time when Hashem is giving victory to the Jewish people. I'm sorry, the end of the puzzle the Radak takes is a reference to when the Egyptians are chasing the Jews and Hashem is protecting them at Yamsuf. So you've got whichever way you take it. And again, I don't want to minimize the difficulty of this thing. I think it is like Tehillim in that there are brief references to ideas, and part of the challenge of there, as I mentioned previously, and it's going to come even more to when we get to Mishlei, is that when you have brief references like that, it's not always clear what the reference is to, and therefore, in the way the commentators differ on that question, even if they're staying within the same general perspective of what's going on in the Perek, the way that they differ can often be edifying in terms of what their set of assumptions are about the topic of the Perek, or about the way certain kinds of salvation work, and so on. So here, you have this difference between Rashi and Radak about these things going on, but we don't have time to go into each one of them and analyze them. Mizam titza, but that's what one thing you can do, which we will try to do in the book of Mishlei, try to analyze what they differ about and how they differ, what that says about their understanding about the nature of wisdom in the book of Mishlei, which is the topic, by and large, of the book of Mishlei. So that's one of the things that we'll be doing there. So here, Mizam titza in Aretz, Be'af tadush goyim. Right, Bizam Titzan Aretz. Rashi thinks it's a reference to ejecting the Canaanite nations from the land of Israel. Bizam Titzan Aretz, you'll go and you'll thresh the nations. Yatzata liyesha, amecha liyesha, ed mishichecha, machatzta rosh mibit rasha, arot yisod ad savar sela. So you've come to deliver your people, to deliver the anointed ones, right? Mishichecha, machatzta rosh mibit rasha, you're going to smash the roof off of a villain's house. I wrote Yisod Ad Savar, and you're going to raise it from the foundation to the top, meaning you're going to thoroughly destroy the evil nations. And here too, both Rashi and Radak think this being a reference to several different Yeshuot. So the Yeshem Mishikach Rashi thinks it's Shaul and David, who were anointed kings, and then I wrote the Yisod is the walls of the idol worshippers, and Ad Savar until the height of
their walls and towers. Radak agrees that referring to different things, but he has a different list of different things. So Yatzata is when they're coming to the land for the seven nations. And then it's also a reference to the future, when he'll take us out of the exile and we'll return to the land. And then I wrote Yisod. He says, "Kalomar tigle ad savaram, kalomar timchatz rosham hu melech magog." So that's a reference to the future war, Gog and Magog, and what's going to happen there. Pasuk Yudalet nakavta v'matav rosh pirazav yisaru lahafitzeni alitzutam kimol le'achol ani b'mistar. So you're gonna nakavta v'matav rosh pirazav. You're gonna crack him open. You're gonna destroy him, and they will storm yisaru lahafitzeni. They'll be blown away. As it is when poor people, so alizutam is usimchatan tia lahafitzeni, kemoshaita bayam shechashvu leachol Yisrael kashitim Mitzrayim. So they wanted these nations that Hashem will be destroying, and will be true of Gog according to the Radak also. These nations who used to celebrate and enjoy destroying and hurting the Jewish people, so that would be what Hashem did to them. So Rashi says in Akavta Batavrosh, referring to Sennacherib, in the time of Chizkiyahu, who gets destroyed outside the walls of Yerushalayim, when they came to try to scatter me and exile me, meaning the people of Yerushalayim. So that instead is what happened to them. So again, for Rashi, it's a reference to things that have already occurred by the time of Habakkuk, of ways in which Hashem has saved the Jewish people. And for Adak, it's also a reference to the future. Derachta Yivayam Susecha Chomer Mayim Rabim, your horses. So for the Radak, that will be not really horses, but your way of saving the Jewish people. The Rechta Vayam Susecha, you went through the sea, Chomer Mayim Rabim, even though there was a lot of water. That's a reference to saving the Jewish people and putting the Egyptians into the sea. So for the Radak, and again, I'm not going to this now because it's part of the question of what you do with poetry and Tehillim and things like that. But the question would be, why would we come back to Yamsuf, we've already mentioned before, and what would be the structure of this chapter, of this perek? Pasuk Ted Zayin Shamati Vatigaz Bitni, the Kolt Salalu Sifatai, Yavo Rakab Va'atzamai V'tachtai Ergaz Asher Anuach Liyom Tzara La'alot Le'am Yegudenu. So he says, when I heard all this, Shamati, my stomach, my insides were upset, they were shaking to hear. My lips quivered at the sound of all of this, and I get sort of a rot entering into my bones, and I tremble where I'm standing. But I'll wait for this. I'll wait calmly for the day of distress when Hashem will come and will save us. So what does it mean? So the Radak, since he's been talking about Gog, thinks that that time, as we've mentioned on other occasions, we've had occasion to mention, that the time of Gog and Magog, when it's envisioned in that way, those sets of wars that will happen, that will eventually lead to the final victory of Hashem, to the final realization of Hashem's power in the world by everybody, but nonetheless there will be times of great trouble and times of great distress. So the Radak reads it as this. So in that version then, the Radak sees the Perek as having been a reference back to Har Sinai and then to the other nations and the punishment they deserve. But now we sort of move forward into the future and discussing Gog and Magog, and Habakkuk is aware of that, which would then mean that the real answer to Habakkuk's questions has been, you have to be aware of all of human history, and in your awareness of all of human history and how it's going to work, you will understand the question of justice and not justice, and how it is that Derech Risha'im et Slicha, how it is that the evildoers are succeeding. And Rashi, by the way, agrees about this pasuk, but pasuk design that is talking about that future time, and that's what's so scary and frightening about it. It's a time that you want, like the Gemara has people who say, right, that I want it to happen, but I don't want to see it. I don't want to be there for the time prior to this because it's a very frightening time. Kita ina lo tifrach ve'in yevul ba'kifanim kachash ma'ase zayit ushtemo lo asa ochel gazar mimichlat son ve'in bakar barifatim. Because there, the fig tree is not going to bud, and there's not going to be any yield on the vine, and there's not going to be any olive crop, and the fields aren't going to produce any of their grain, and there aren't going to be any cattle in the pen, in their cattle pen, that there's not going to be any success at that time, so Rashi thinks it's talking about Bavel, that they're going to be completely wiped out at that time, they're not going to have any success, and that's going to be bad for them. So, and the Radak thinks it's talking about the nations that are gathering against Yerushalayim in the war of Gog and Magog, that they will have all of these problems. So it's not clear, though, to me that you wouldn't have, that you had to read it that way, because you could have also read it as, this is a continuation of Pasuk Ted Zayin. In Pasuk Ted Zayin, he was expressing his worry and his fear of this time. And so then it might be also that in that time there's going to be great economic distress, and there won't be much produce, and food prices will go up, and things will be problematic and difficult. So Pasuk Yudchet though gives us a conclusion: when you Hashem Eloza Agila Belokei Yishiv, but I will celebrate with Hashem, rejoice in the war, in the Lord, and exult when Hashem saved me. Hashem Elokim Cheli.
There might be Elokim Hashem Cheli. Vayasem Raglai Ka'ayalot Ve'alba Muta Yad Yicheni.
He is my strength, right? And he makes my legs like Ayalot, meaning I'll be speedy and fast, and he will take me, let me stride upon the heights, meaning Hashem will lead me back to where I need to go. Laminatseach Beneginotai. So Laminatseach Beneginotai is now perhaps an instruction to how to do the music, but it's a closing of the chapter in Tehillim. Right? Rashi says, the Ben Levi Menatseach Bashir, I'm going to Anim Lo Beneginotai, I'm going to give him my tunes, I'm going to give him my words. So that the conclusion of Pesukim Yutet, and therefore the conclusion of the Sefer of the Book of Habakkuk, is, now that we come to see it, remarkably similar to the conclusion of the Book of Iyo, right? The Book of Iyo, in a slightly different way, but the Book of Iyo basically, and this is a hard thing to understand and how exactly it works, but the Book of Iyo would seem to basically make the argument that it all works out in the end, we don't really know Hashem, we can't really understand Hashem, it's not really for us to ask, even though Iyo does ask. We should just learn to trust in Hashem and to rely upon Hashem, and that's what we need to do. So if we take Chazal's understanding of the Book of Habakkuk, you sort of have that as well. He sees Nineveh successful, and he also understands that Babel is going to be successful, and he doesn't understand how it can work in human history that such things can happen because they are obviously evildoers, and therefore he stands to complain not only because he needs to complain, but also because people of his time, and I stress this because, again, it's an example of people being somewhat oblivious to their own failings. So people of his time are complaining to him, so he complains to Hashem. He stands, Hashem says to him, right, he complains to Hashem saying, how could it happen? Hashem says to him, it won't happen that way. He'll get his, and it'll all work out. And that's his larger answer, that he'll get his punishment eventually, but the time frame is not the time frame that you might have thought that it should be, and therefore it won't happen in the time frame that you're expecting it necessarily to happen. And then he comes to apologize to Hashem to say, I recognize this, and if I paid attention to all of Jewish history and all of human history, I now realize that I would understand exactly what was going on, and that's what I should have been doing, and therefore he makes a prayer, which in Rashi's reading is a prayer asking for some level of forgiveness for having had been so, we would call it chutzpah, so audacious as to challenge Hashem in these ways, and that, and recognizing that he should have, Habakkuk should have, instead of doing it that way, Habakkuk should have found the way to understand what Hashem is doing and to accept Hashem's justice and the fact that Hashem does it in the righteous, proper ways, if only he had paid attention to all of human history. And that is, I think, a piece of advice that we could also use as well here as we close the Book of Habakkuk. Tomorrow we'll start the Book of Tzafanya. So as we close the Book of Habakkuk, to realize that these are fundamental underlying lessons that are supposed to have come down to us from Har Sinai, we're supposed to have kept with us since Har Sinai, that in fact all of human history does work out. It takes the historic view, the historic perspective, to understand what's going on and to realize and to always know that Hashem is with us. Hashem gives us what we need and what we perhaps don't even deserve many times, and that it is for us to keep that perspective and that attitude in mind and in our understanding so that we can fully experience the salvation of Hashem and celebrate it in the way that we're supposed to. Have a great day.